Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, welcome in. It is a fantastic Wednesday. Now, Curtis, we didn't get the Mariners win that we were looking for. Justin Verlander
happened.
Boy, yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you tag him for four home runs, you're like, oh, maybe we figured this guy out. And
yeah,
he's like, actually, no, he's going to the Hall of Fame. So
yeah,
he's good.
Yeah, there's a thing called adjustments. And, you know, the best in the game know how to make those adjustments.
Life is all about adjustments.
It is. And unfortunately, you know, the Mariners were not able to, you know, finish the series today, but, you know,
can win the series today.
We still can, and we'll get into all of that coming up at 10:30. But right now, Curtis, we've got to talk about the big news that dropped yesterday about DK Metcalf.
What's going on with him?
Oh, you haven't heard. You have not heard. You liar. We talked about this yesterday. Did you just black out?
My voice was on the promo saying the news to all of us.
How dare you lie to all of us? Look, this is a situation that really surprised me. I think it surprised everybody because the conversation around DK Metcalf and him showing up to OTAs initially and everything from Pete Carroll to John Schneider to DK Metcalf himself has been all about how they want DK Metcalf to be here. He wants to be here. He wants to take on this new leadership role. Everything just seemed to be going very, very smooth, right? And it made you optimistic and excited that, all right, these guys are working together. They're on the same page. There's going to be no drama when it comes to the contract negotiations. And then we have this in cut number one.
DK Metcalf not in attendance at the Seahawks minicamp, and I am told the team considers this an unexcused absence. Now, Metcalf has continued to rehab from off-season foot surgery down in California. I'm told that that is going well, but he is not touching the field at this point without a new contract. He's entering the last year of his rookie deal, do a little under $4 million in 2022. The Seahawks aren't usually a team that is overly aggressive in terms of finding players, but they could dock Metcalf upwards of $93,000 for missing the entire minicamp.
So when it comes to that conversation, I mean, I think it's very, very clear that right now there's a snag. There's a snag in those contract negotiations, and I don't believe you can interpret it any other way, right? Yesterday when the news happened, we were trying to figure out, okay, is this going to be an excused absence? Is this not a big deal at all because everybody's on the same page and we're just reacting to the initial news, right? Trying to stay calm and let cooler heads prevail here. But the moment it came out that DK Metcalf's absence was unexcused and that the Seahawks can subject DK Metcalf to fines because of that, that changes everything.
That ratchets up the intensity and the seriousness of it. Because when you hear unexcused, I think it means that the Seahawks were caught completely off guard by it. I think Pete Carroll during OTAs talked about, you know, can't wait to see DK back in town, you know, can't wait to see him during minicamp, and that was just a couple weeks ago. Now DK will not be reporting to minicamp, I imagine, at any point over the next couple days. So what happened? How did we get here? That is
right.
What we are going to attempt to do today throughout the course of this show. Mm-hmm. How did it get to this point where DK is like, you know what, I'm better off not being there? Now, health-wise, I can understand why he wouldn't participate as he's still rehabbing that foot injury he had last year and got surgery on. Like, I totally understand why he would not want to participate on the field.
Right.
But there, you know, we see it from Quandre Diggs, who is there. Yeah, he's got a contract. Jamal Adams, he's there, has a contract. Those two guys are also rehabbing injuries. And they're not going to be on the field, but DK doing more than that,
yes,
to, I think, make sure that we know the seriousness of how he feels about his contract status.
But why does he need to do that, though, right? That's the biggest question. We all know that he's serious about wanting to get a new deal, right? I mean, we know that DK Metcalf wants to get new money and to get paid, and that's no surprise to the Seattle Seahawks. But why did he feel like this was the appropriate move to get his message across? That's the question, and I want to explore two things, Curtis, before you answer that, because let's go to cut number two. This is Mike Garofalo from May talking about what the Seahawks are going to have to do to get this deal done.
I made a point of saying A.J. Brown got $25 million per year, and if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm saying I've got to be north of that because my numbers are better than A.J. Brown's. I was named a second-team All-Pro. A.J. Brown wasn't. But since we've gotten a look at that deal, it's not quite 25 in real money. It's kind of, if you look at the structure over the first couple of years, like 23, I believe, Ian, is the number we came out at. So if DK Metcalf gets to a real 25, like he's going to earn 25 per year over the first couple of years, now I think you're in the ballpark.
So, you know, you're looking at that, a real $25 million plus. I personally think it's probably more than that. And then the other part of it is, okay, so what's the strategy here? Okay, so we know the floor of the contract, right? What is the strategy that is taking place here? Cut number 22, we talked with ESPN's Brady Henderson yesterday, and he said, look, you know, it's a two-way street in negotiation. The Seahawks may be sitting here and saying we want to get a deal done right now, and DK would benefit from maybe dragging this on. Let's listen to that.
It would also make sense for DK Metcalf to wait. And that's why I just wonder, it's just curious that, you know, the thought that he's unhappy or this thought that he may be unhappy that there's no deal yet. I wonder about that because I wonder if maybe that's by design and that he's trying to wait things out.
I believe that angle should be taken very seriously. And I think that's a great perspective that Brady Henderson brings to the table. However, it doesn't make sense to me that DK Metcalf wants to hold out and wait and wait and wait and wait to see what Deebo Samuel and Terry McLaurin get if he's holding out from mandatory minicamp, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is clearly and subjecting himself to fines. This is a different stance, trying to send a message saying, to me, from my perspective, saying, I either want contract negotiations to get started, like, this is going too slow, or the original offer you gave me is I deem is disrespectful, and therefore we're gonna show you how we feel about it.
I find it interesting that DK is going this route because the Seahawks have never ever done business with a player outside of training camp except for Russell Wilson, and that's because Russell Wilson and Mark Rogers held the Seahawks feet to the fire and said, we're not going to negotiate past this date, which was, I think, in April of what, 2019, something like that, saying, we're not negotiating past this date. Either you give us an offer that we like, or we are not going to engage in contract talks. So the Seahawks, obviously, with the quarterback position being held in a much different regard than any other position on the field, that is why they chose to do business with Russ. And look, that is going to be a tough pill for a lot of guys to swallow on the Seahawks roster. Like, yeah, you are not as important as the quarterback in terms of getting these deals done. And DK, like, is the face of the franchise right now, in my opinion. He is the one guy that is going to get people to tune in that aren't Seahawks fans to tune into Seahawks games this year.
Yeah, 100%.
But you're a wide receiver, and wide receiver is one of the most expendable positions on the field. That is a position where there are a lot of guys you can find out there that can catch a football and catch it well. And yeah, his skill set is hard to replicate, but his numbers aren't throughout the NFL. You are going to find guys that can catch, you know, 75 to 90 passes. You're going to find guys that can get over 1,000 yards receiving, up to 1,500 yards receiving. Like, his numbers are replicable. Is that okay?
Yeah,
that
replicable.
Word?
Yeah.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
But his physical skill set is not easy to find, obviously.
Correct.
That sets him apart.
Yeah.
But look, the Seahawks have dug their heels in on every player that has sought a contract extension.
Yes.
Why does DK think this is going to be any different?
Well, what I believe is going on is one of those two things that I just said before, is that, Curtis, this isn't necessarily, hey, you're going to now pay me because I'm sitting out. I'm going to take this week to take a shot across the bow, so to speak, and say, don't take me for granted. Yes, I have committed to the organization. I've said all these things and about Geno Smith and Drew Locke and all this and that, but I want to get paid. I want to get this contract, and I want to get going. I don't want my contract to bleed all the way into training camp. I would rather resolve this in June and get this done before we get off to the summer. Wouldn't you like to get that done, Pete and John, before you go off to vacation and not have to worry or stress about it? Like, to me,
that would make your summer break a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, let's take
you can sit by the pool, sip your Mai Tais, yes, and not have to worry about the face of your franchise wanting a new deal. I think that would put everybody at ease. But as we know, that's just not how it's probably going to go.
It most likely will not. That's the part that I think is the first sign of trouble to me. And yesterday I labeled it as a red flag in these negotiations. Up to this point, it's been smooth sailing, right? And now you find the first time where there is a friction point between DK Metcalf and the Seahawks. How does it get resolved? Well, you saw Shelby Harris. He got a contract restructured just today. Now, I think that is normal operating procedure for the Seahawks to take new veteran players that they traded for or added and rework their deals around this time. So I don't necessarily think that it's totally correlated to DK Metcalf and his, this contract. But what I believe now is it's got to be, oh, okay, well, we weren't anticipating this. DK, why are you mad? Why are you upset? What can we do to get you here? How do we resolve this problem? Because here's the other thing that's just fascinating to me. DK Metcalf's going to be here in Washington at the end of the month.
Yeah, he's got his charity softball game.
Yes.
At Cheney Stadium.
Correct.
He's going to be in your neighborhood.
Yes, he will. Right down the street.
Bring him over.
Heck yeah, you kidding
me? He's going to hang out with Jackson, Bodie, and River.
Yeah, going to come over to the house. You betcha. He's going to jump on the trampoline. We're going to have a great old time.
Yeah, he's going to help you keep deer off your lawn.
Nobody can stop that.
Okay.
But to me, this is the part of these negotiations that what happens at this point is going to set the tone for eventually how tumultuous or how quickly the both sides can resolve this issue that they currently have. And I believe that this is much more about DK Metcalf wanting contract negotiations to get fired up, to get resolved sooner rather than later. And if you pay him close to what he wants to be paid or relatively close to that, I don't think he's going to worry or stress, Curtis, if Deebo Samuel or Terry McLaurin get paid more than DK Metcalf. I don't think he's going to care about that. As long as he gets his, that's all that matters. And it doesn't matter if it comes in July or June. I understand the negotiating tactic that could behoove him to do so, but this seems to me more about somebody that wants to have a little bit more urgency in these negotiations. All right, let's get to headline rewrites. Brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right, first up, the Mariners couldn't muster up much against Justin Verlander and the Astros in their 4-1 loss. What's the real headline?
Real headline, but at least the Mariners went to bed last night knowing they're not the Astros.
Oh, look, come on.
They can win as much as they want, but boy, I would not want to be an Astros fan. That is an organization that is so hateable.
Yes,
and
they are.
Maybe it's jealousy that makes me feel that way. Like, if I were an Astros fan, it'd probably be an amazing feeling knowing that everyone's out to get you. But boy, they are just some deplorable people over there.
Man, wouldn't that be a great feeling? It would be a great feeling.
Amazing.
To be so much on the mountaintop that you've got a bullseye everybody's gunning for, and you're like, what? Bring it! Let's go! Right? But look, the Houston Astros are one of the reasons why they're you despise them is obviously first and foremost the cheating scandal, right? Before that, they were actually kind of like the likable.
Yeah, it was like, oh, look at this
giant
plucky bunch of guys that have come together and they're all homegrown and win a World Series. And then, like,
an organization that's been terrible for a long time.
There was obviously the cheating scandal. And then there was that situation with their assistant GM who was, like, yelling at women reporters.
Oh, yes.
Which, that was ugly. There's been a couple other things going on with the Astros. I think their owner, Jim Crane, may have said some stuff that was very, very bad. But, I could never, ever bring myself to root for the success of the Astros, especially after the last 5 years or so, this run. Really, ever since they've joined the American League West, they've been a pain, a thorn in the side of the Mariners. Logan Gilbert, go out and win a series today. That'd be a nice consolation prize after getting shut down last night.
It would be. And look, baseball is one of those games that, look, you don't have to hang your head after one performance. You get back the very next night and you have an opportunity to win the next one. And honestly, that's why that game 2 nights ago was so big, right? Winning that first game in the series, it allows you to have some margin for error, knowing that you're going to have Justin Verlander, you're going to be going up against him, and knowing that you're most likely not going to get the better of, you know, you're not going to best him twice. I think that is, you know, a comforting feeling. And like you mentioned, Logan Gilbert hits the mound. This is your opportunity to really, take advantage of that series, that first series win and be able to walk out of there at Houston as the series winner, then go 4 straight series wins, Curtis? Could it be?
4 in a row?
Could it be?
Headline rewrites.
Next up, we have the Angels have fired Joe Maddon as their manager in the midst of a 12-game losing streak. What's the real headline?
Real headline, it's a shame that it didn't stop their losing streak from reaching 13 games.
This is why...
Extra innings loss last night.
I'm not as familiar with the Joe Maddon situation there in Anaheim. And, you know, maybe there was a lot of stuff brewing underneath the surface, and clearly there was, in regards to relationships, regarding, you know, the overall belief and trust in Joe Maddon. But I have a hard time believing that firing your manager at this point in the season, somebody that has the experience of Joe Maddon, is going to fix your problems, is going to solve your problems. I mean, this is a avalanche of a losing streak for the Angels, and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to really get themselves out of this.
And it makes no sense either, because you look at the talent on their roster, it is absurd. Yeah, they don't have Anthony Rendon right now, who's hurt, but you still have the two best players on the planet. Yeah, Mike Trout has been ice cold as of late. He snapped, the 0-for-26 slump he was in.
Yes.
And Shohei Ohtani, with the bat this year, has not been quite the same player he was a year ago. But Taylor Ward is having a career year. There are other guys on this roster that have been really, really good this season. I don't see how they have fallen so hard so fast. And to the relationship between Joe Maddon and Angels owner Artie Moreno, it sounds like there was a lot of friction there, especially considering that the Angels hadn't had a winning season yet under Maddon in his first 2 years. He was entering the final year of a 3-year contract and did not get any assurances that he would be back next year, so it felt like he was kind of a lame duck this season if the Angels didn't turn it around. Now, they got off to such a scorching hot start, everybody's like, oh, well, Angels are making the playoffs. Now it's like, are they even going to finish above the Mariners this season? Are they going to finish above the Rangers?
Yeah.
They are in a complete free fall. You love to see it.
You do love to see it. Oh, man.
Boy, speaking of teams that have been a thorn in the Mariners' side, the Angels right up there.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things that while the Mariners were losing and losing badly, seeing the Angels win at that rate was soul-crushing. It was soul-crushing. And now to see them lose like this and to see them in this 13-game winning streak, it gives me life.
Headline rewrites.
And finally, we have Kraken goalie Chris Drieger is expected to miss the next 7 to 9 months after tearing his ACL at the World Championships with Team Canada. What's the real headline?
Real headline, even when the Kraken aren't playing, they somehow find a way to lose.
So,
there it is. Oh. 7 to 9 months you're going to be without Chris Drieger. That would put him at about January or February of next season.
Oh,
coming back.
Man.
I mean, yeah, he wasn't that good this season.
Neither was
Philip Grubauer in net.
No.
But, like, your backup goalie is kind of like your backup quarterback, where you've got to make sure you've got a competent one, or else things can get really bad. I would imagine Joey Decord becomes the backup. I don't know if they're going to go out and acquire one, especially because they have a lot of money tied up in Philip Grubauer and Chris Drieger.
You can't sink any more money in the goalies.
Yeah, I think they're paying them combined about $9 million.
Yeah.
Which, the NHL salary cap is not... It's nowhere close to what it is in the NBA and the NHL. It's about $80-something million, and I believe it's going to stay the same heading into next year as it was this last year. Yeah, the Kraken will have a lot of cap space to work with. I think they have over $20 million, but you don't need to sink any more costs into that position.
Correct.
Go with Joey Decord as your backup. You've got Philip Grubauer, who I guess you hope and pray for a bounce-back season.
Curtis. Can't get any worse than what it was this last year. It can't get any worse than what it was last year.
We say that.
Well, you're right. We do say that. Maybe it could, but you're absolutely right. You are hoping that Philip Grubauer in his second year has more comfort, that Ron Francis is able to put a team together that, really defensively puts him in the best positions possible. Because, yeah, Grubauer was a major disappointment, but so was that defense. I mean, let's be real.
Oh, yeah.
So, we'll have to wait and see how that all comes together.
They got the number 4 pick coming up in July. They've got a lot of cap space to work with. Matty Beniers, we'll get a full season of him.
Hey.
We're
on the up and up.
You got to think that the trajectory arrow is going up, right?
Certainly. I mean, that's obviously the hope, and that's why I think from this point forward, everybody, Ron Francis, and you look at, everybody involved in the organization, that this is the time where you need to show those improvements, steady improvements from year to year. All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Verlander got the better of the Mariners yesterday, but what do we have? We've got a rubber match, people. We preview that next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Brady, you going to play DMX today on a Wednesday? That's how you feel? Okay. All right.
DMX is fine anyway.
Look, Stacey Ross is out, as you could tell. Jay keeps filling in for Stacey as the lead host today. Got Curtis Rogers joining me like yesterday, and we got Brady Bones behind the glass. So we're feeling comfortable, but we do miss Stacey. We hope that she is feeling better, and we definitely are excited for her eventual return. But we, look, we were hoping that the Mariners were going to wrap up this series against the Houston Astros, that you take that fight. They take that fight. And the emotion and everything else, and they are able to use this as a galvanizing moment, right? But what did we talk about? What did our good friend Aaron Goldsmith?
Well, maybe your good friend Aaron Goldsmith. He just spent the whole interview taking shots at me.
You're 100% right.
I kid. I love Aaron.
Yes. Well, maybe.
I won't. Yeah, don't let him know I said that.
But Aaron, he came on and he said, look, can it be that moment emotionally? Yeah. Does it always work like that in baseball? No.
Not necessarily.
Right?
And momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher.
Yep.
And last night's starting pitcher just so happens to be someone whose place in Cooperstown is a lock. He's won a World Series. He's won multiple Cy Youngs. He's thrown multiple no-hitters. It's Justin Verlander. And what happened? Struck out 12 Mariners over 7 innings. Was incredible. And the Mariners' bats just couldn't get anything going, and they lose 4-1 last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not anything that you're looking at, and this is not a shot at Chris Flexen, right? This is not a shot at Chris Flexen. I mean, he did as good as he could have done, I personally think, in that game. I mean, he didn't lose you the game, Curtis.
No, and what stinks about the season that Chris Flexen is having is that is the fourth time this year he has had to oppose Justin Verlander. So, obviously, his win-loss record is going to suffer because of who he's facing.
I'd be so bitter
and,
about that.
Yeah, I think he's, 3-6, 3-7 this year?
Mm-hmm.
Four of his starts have been against Justin Verlander. The Astros are 3-1 in those starts against the Mariners. Yeah, not fair for flexing in the Mariners. But look, those are the cards you're dealt with. But to that point of momentum being as good as the next day's starting pitcher, it's the Mariners today that have that edge over the Astros, because it's Logan Gilbert who has been your ace this season.
Yes.
And whether we want to crown him as such officially, put the crown above him,
I think we should. You know, Brady, I don't know if you could drum up some, you know, official royal music or anything, but look, this is...
We dub thee,
the Jake and Stacy show, Jason minus Stacy with Curtis and Brady in. We dub Logan Gilbert the ace of the Seattle Mariners.
All right.
Okay? Like, it's official, right? This isn't royal music. What are you doing? What are you doing? Come on, Brady. Come on.
It's okay.
It's all right.
But, yeah, I think his numbers obviously have been some of the best in the American League. In fact, I believe All-Star voting starts today across Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You can't vote for pitchers, which I believe is up to the American League manager, which is Dusty Baker. So, look, you've got an opportunity to impress the guy who could send you to the All-Star game today. That would be a nice little consolation. I wonder if Dusty Baker is going to take less Mariners than maybe should get a nod. I think Ty France is deserving. I think Logan Gilbert is deserving of a nod. Those are the two locks. I think maybe if JP... Oh.
There we go. Yes. Dub the Logan Gilbert,
the ace of the snap.
That's right. Thank you. Perfect. All right, there we go. Now this is the part where you're looking at this for the Mariners in the long term, Curtis, that if Logan Gilbert goes down out there and as the ace, the newly dubbed ace of the Jake and Stacy show, that now he goes out there and shuts it down and does what he does best, and they're able to get out on, you know, the Astros starting pitcher, which they did last time around, right? They were able to jump on him really, really strongly. And so now, if you're able to win this, that's four straight series wins, Curtis.
And you look at the teams that are above them in the American League West, the Angels, they've lost, four straight series? Obviously, they've lost everything. The Rangers, the Mariners just beat them 2 out of 3. The Mariners heading into last night were only 2.5 out of the final wild card spot in the American League. We have talked a lot of just about how beaten down we felt at times during this season, especially when they were scuffling in the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here we are, June 8th, looking at another potential series win. If the Mariners win tonight, that will have been, 8 of their last 12 games they've won?
Yes.
Which is a .667 win percentage, which over the course of a season or... No, that's over the course of a season, that's 90-plus win pace.
Right.
Now, it would be nice to see the Mariners string 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wins in a row together, but slowly but surely, it feels like they might be digging their way out of the hole that they put themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to see a lot more from this team before I feel complete confidence in them. And I mean,
I think that's fair. Now, what would you need to see? Because I agree with you. I totally agree with you, because it doesn't feel that way, right? We talk about, you know, a potential for four straight series wins. We talk about, look, they will have won 8 of the last 12 is what we said, 8 of the last 12 games.
If they win today.
That's great. That's awesome. But why doesn't it feel that way?
Right? It feels like going into today, it's like, all right, I mean, Logan Gilbert on the mound, you got a great shot, but .. And I think a lot of it right now has to do with the offense once you get past about spot number 5 in the order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually where Eugenio Suarez is at. You look at the bottom of the order. And we'll get to this coming up here in just a little bit, kind of one of the guys that we have pinpointed as, like, either this guy needs to really step it up or they need to put somebody else in his place.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't hit at the bottom of the order right now. But you look at guys like Adam Frazier, and you look at guys like, just at the bottom of the order, it does not excite me. And Abraham Toro.
Sam Haggerty.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, we had him on. He was an excellent interview.
Yeah,
we loved him.
Sam's a great guy. Cal Raleigh is starting to look like a competent hitter,
yeah,
which is a huge boost, but still he's below 200. to me, I think the offense is where the Mariners need the most help right now, because the bullpen has actually done somewhat decently recent.
They've settled a little bit.
Yeah, you had Brian Baruchy last night giving up the home run to Yordan Alvarez, but I mean, Baruchy, that was his first ever appearance as a Mariner. You've got guys like Castillo turning it around. Mm-hmm. Seawald has looked good. He's not the pitcher that he was a year ago. His strikeout numbers are actually considerably down from what they were a year ago, but he's still getting outs. To me, it's the offense that needs a jolt, and maybe they get it with a guy down in AAA, not the guy we're thinking of.
not Jared Kelnick?
Not Jared Kelnick.
He hit a monster bomb last night, by the way.
Keep him there.
Yeah.
I don't care that he hit a monster 450
something bomb.
Yeah, that's neat. Yeah. Let those AAA fans experience what Jared Kelnick is like for a full season. Keep him down there. I don't care. But the offense needs a jolt, and I think we have pinpointed where they can find it and who.
Justin Upton?
Well, I mean, You said it, not me.
Okay. All right. This is bad. You know, bad way. But look, we'll see what Justin Upton eventually provides when he gets done with his ramp up period here at the AAA level. But what I do believe, though, is that what you're going to have to see here is you're going to have to see the frontline players really continue to step up. And you know, one of the things that just ended up happening with the identity of the 2021 Mariners was that you just never knew who it was going to be their night. What random player was it going to be? Was it going to be Rake Fraley? Was it going to be Dylan Moore? You know, was it going to be Luis Torrens? You just had no idea, but somebody was going to step up that particular night. And for this team right now, you're still trying to figure out what the true identity of the team is, what the makeup of the team is. And I think that that's why it hasn't totally felt like, you know, they have an opportunity to get their fourth straight series win. Like they've won potentially, you know, 8 of the last 12. So we will keep an eye on all of that, but a huge opportunity for the Mariners tonight as they take on the Houston Astros. All right. We've got a problem that we need to address for the Mariners, okay? You don't want to go anywhere because we have the answer to solve this problem. That's coming up next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, no wasting time. We're getting right to this, Curtis, okay? The Mariners currently have a Jesse Winker problem, and they need to figure out how to solve it, okay? So Curtis and I have come up with a couple solutions here for you, okay? We're going to get right into it. Now, first, before we do that, I think that you need to hear from two people that we, you know, obviously
hold in high regard.
Hold in high regard and give you great insight is looking at, let's go to cut number 17. Jerry DePoto from last week on with Mike Salk talked about how the expectations might be weighing on Winker a little bit.
I think Jesse's trying to figure out the transition into a new ballpark, a new team. That was, you know, I don't want to say a disruptive moment. I think he was excited and remains excited to come to the Mariners. But obviously the first 2 months of the season haven't gone. He's got a tremendous track record. He's irrefutably been an excellent major league hitter through the course of his career. And, you know, a lot of guys, when they come in, they feel the weight of expectation. And I think we see that with some of our guys, frankly, that aren't performing, you know, on par with their career norm.
Now, you can be mad at Jerry DePoto in terms of saying, well, Jesse Winker isn't that guy. He's not what he used to be or blah, blah, blah. Jerry DePoto's right. Jesse Winker, from an OPS standpoint, in his entire career has never been below 830. Never been below 830.
And 830 is a good number to have.
Yes.
For your OPS.
And last year he was at 949. I mean, traditionally he is a great hitter, a very, very good, competent hitter, and has the ability to be an all-star level player like he was last year. Right now, that's not happening. That's not working. And so and they've tried a number of different things up to this point. And I think, you know, cut number 16, this is a sentiment from somebody like John Morosi that I think you really have to start taking seriously at this point.
I did the math on this today. They basically have to play about 600 baseball for the rest of the year to make the playoffs. That's if they win 6 out of every 10 going forward, whatever it looks like right now, whatever the calculation is, how many games you're back of Minnesota or Boston, I really believe if the Mariners win 6 out of 10 going forward, they can make the playoffs. And so you have to now if you were to just basically say, okay, from day one, from now to the end of the year, we got to be a 600 team, I think you give Winker another couple weeks, but I think that the patience probably starts to run out around the end of June.
So when you're looking at this in terms of, okay, when do you start thinking about putting Winker on the bench or, you know, really sitting there and saying to yourself, look, we've got to find a way to get this guy a breather. We've got to find a way to get him to relax, to see a different perspective, or just from a competitive standpoint, you know, we can't just put Jesse Winker in the lineup every single night just because.
Well, and if the Mariners continue to stack a couple wins here and there, and get back into this thing, get closer to 500, get even closer in that wild card race, maybe overtake the Angels and Rangers, I think you're going to have to look at your roster and say, all right, how do we get better? And it may not be through addition so much as it may be, look, this guy is not helping us win. He is a detriment right now to what we want to do. And Jesse Winker so far has been that in his first 2+ months in a Mariner uniform. He is not hitting anywhere close to what the Mariners had hoped he would. He's got mm-hmm. 3 home runs on the season.
He's got a -9 WAR.
Yeah, that is brutally bad. Considering where we're at in the season, if you multiply that by 3, because we're about a third of the way through the season, we're looking at a -2.7 WAR over the course of a season.
Yes.
That is going to end up being one of the worst in all of baseball. I mean, look at Jared Kelnick's numbers last year. He was around a minus. That was basically what Jared Kelnick was in terms of WAR a year ago, and mm-hmm. we know how bad his season was in 2021. If the Mariners want to get to where they want to go, they are going to have to look at some of these guys that they're giving regular playing time to and say, is this the best possible roster we can make for ourselves right now? And we talked about in the last segment, we've talked about it over the last couple of days. Jason Churchill's mentioned it. We've mentioned it. Stacey's mentioned it. How Jared Kelnick needs to stay in AAA for as long as possible.
Yes.
To get as much comfortability, to get as much seasoning as possible. Now, you do have an option in AAA other than Kelnick to bring up. It's a veteran option. He's not going to be as good defensively. Probably going to end up being more of a DH if he does make it to the major league level, which I believe he will because he signed a major league contract.
Yeah.
And that's Justin Upton, who has looked decent in AAA. He's hit a few home runs. He's been batting second in the Rainiers order for quite a while now. Is Justin Upton going to be an upgrade over Jesse Winker? Maybe, but I have a hard time believing he's going to be any worse than Winker's been this season.
Very true. Now, the other part of this, the immediate fix part of it, is not just moving around Winker or maybe benching him potentially and looking into that, but certainly you have to get him out of the leadoff spot.
Yes,
because that experiment did not work. It did not provide the spark that you needed. And what they need to do ASAP is put J.P. Crawford or Julio Rodriguez off in the leadoff spot.
Yeah,
I think that that move right there would absolutely help this team. And having Jesse Winker be in the leadoff right now, I understand the move and why they tried it and why they tried to give that a shot. It's not working, and they need to make that change and that adjustment immediately because JP has played in that spot before. He excelled in that spot. I think that would be an excellent move. But also, you know, Julio makes a lot of sense because of his speed and his ability to really be, you know, a fire starter and get things going and then have Ty France come up right behind him. I mean, so one of those two guys I would love to see be the leadoff hitter.
I think there might be people hearing you say, put Julio on the leadoff. So they go, why? He's doing so good in the middle of the order. But
right.
You want your best hitters to have the most at-bats. And a player that I look at as comparable to maybe what Julio can be is Ronald Acuna of the Atlanta Braves. Or maybe mm-hmm. George Springer of the Blue Jays. One of those two guys. Those two guys hit at the very top of the order of their respective teams. Ronald Acuna in his career has over 100 career home runs, and he's only, what, 24 years old? Yeah, he's got 110 career home runs. 96 of those have come out of the leadoff spot in Atlanta.
Yeah.
George Springer, I believe, has like 50-something career leadoff home runs to start a game. you can have power at the very top of your lineup. It is possible. Like, that is not something that totally needs to be in the middle part of your order.
Yeah.
Heck, we saw it a couple of years ago. Mitch Haniger was batting leadoff for the Mariners and was having an incredible run of success atop the lineup.
Yeah.
So it doesn't you don't have to follow the traditions of typical batting orders. You can put Julio at the leadoff spot. And look, we've seen it since really the start of the month of May.
Yes.
Wherever you put Julio in the lineup, he is going to deliver.
He is going to deliver, and he possesses the speed to be able to, all right, he gets a single, he can steal to second, right? He can put you in scoring position, either through his bat or with his legs. I mean, so I think that it does make a lot more sense than what people initially would hear. I would be fine if they left him at the three spot, but it's either J.P. Crawford or Julio Rodriguez to me that should get that leadoff spot moving forward. All right, you've been listening to Jake and Stacey. You're listening to the Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, right now, we have to look at critically, if the Seahawks do not start Drew Lock, what was the return for Russell Wilson? We evaluate that coming up next.